Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm speaking with Paula Margulies, award-winning author of the historical novel Favorite Daughter, Part 1. She's also written the novel Coyote Heart and a short story collection called Face Value, Collected Stories. My guest is also a contributor to Author Magazine, the San Diego Examiner, and the Writer's Edge. She owns and runs Paula Margulies Communications, a public relations firm for authors and artists. Welcome, Paula. It's a pleasure having you on Bookshelf.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Let's begin with your new novel, Favorite Daughter, Part 1. This is the Pocahontas story, but it's told from her perspective. What prompted you to tell such a well-known and iconic story from the Native American point of view, instead of from John Smith's?
Well, you know, I wrote my first novel, which was set here in San Diego, a contemporary novel, and it was called Coyote Heart, and it was set on the Pala Indian Reservation. So it had a Native American story to it, a theme to it. Mm-hmm. And finished that novel and decided, you know, I was going to write a sequel to it or something similar. And at that time, I happened to read a book by Sina Jeter Naslin, a historical novel called Abundance, which was about Marie Antoinette, the life of Marie Antoinette. And she told the story from her point of view, rather than the traditional history
right.
we've heard about the French Revolution and let them eat cake and all of that.
Right.
She let Marie Antoinette tell her version of what happened. And she was 14 years old when she was first brought to France to marry this king. And it was fascinating. And just to hear that first person voice and get that
sure.
female perspective on history, I thought, oh, I want to do that. Uh-huh. So I thought, okay, who would I write about? And I've always been interested in Pocahontas. I grew up here in California, where we learned, California history in fourth grade when we visited the missions and all of that. So I didn't really know the Pocahontas story. And when I started to read her story, I read both the John Smith version of history, some of his writing, some of the historians that were out there, Massacre and Helen Rountree. And then I came across some Native American tellings of her story. And the one that was most interesting to me was written by Dr. Linwood Custolo, who's a Mattaponi Indian, and with the help of Angela Daniel, who is also Mattaponi. And their version of her story was, he claimed, handed down through oral tradition, 400 years of oral tradition. And his version was very different than the John Smith version. And I thought, oh, here's the story I'd like to tell. And I'd like to let her tell it just
right.
the way Naslin did in her book. So that's how the whole thing came about.
So it's really like uncovering the real story.
Yeah.
And I know that it's this one, the story of Pocahontas, from her point of view, that it's darker than the version that we're familiar with. Tell us about that. How did your research lead you to this darker version? And why do you think it hasn't made its way into popular storytelling until now?
That's a great question. You know, I think so much of history has a male perspective. I think in this case, John Smith wrote quite a bit about his time in the colonies, and that's because the Virginia Company of London had hired him to come to the new land and find, you know, this, you know, gold and whatever other natural resources they were looking for. And so a lot of his writing was, I think his purpose was to make himself look good and to make the colonists
right.
look good and to make the venture look successful. So the focus was more, I think, on that perspective. And I think the natives that they met along the way were incorporated into his version of the story in order to show him in a good light. Well, when you read the native version of the story, according to Dr. Custolo, it's much darker. Gosh, when she first met John Smith, she was 11 years old. She was a young girl. So the romanticized version of the relationship between her and Smith, he was 27 when he came in 1607 to the colony. Yeah, so there's a huge age gap there. I, in my imagination and from what I've read in history, I think they were very good friends. I think they were fascinated with each other, mm-hmm. but she was a very young girl. And so, according to Custolo, there never was that romantic relationship. But there was a political reason for her to be involved, and that her father saw that she had this, you know, kind of friendship with Smith, and he kind of used that. In fact, she was kind of used by all the men in her life, and that's a lot of the story, is kind of the betrayal and the, just the way she figured in the history. But according to Costello, it was very dark. She was abducted, which is a known fact in history, after she married Cocoam, and there is dispute over whether he even existed. But for those historians who say she was married to this native, Cocoam, she lived in his village, and his uncle was the chief of the tribe, and the uncle conspired with the colonists for the abduction. They were the ones who actually lured her onto the onboard ship, and her father did not rescue her. I mean, they kind of held her for ransom, and he said, no, I'm not going to do it. And I think that broke her heart in a lot of ways. And so according to Dr. Costello, when she converted to Christianity, this was coerced. She was held there against her will. According to him, she was raped by the governor of the colony at the time, Thomas Gates. And in fact, he claims that the marriage to John Rolfe, she later married a colonist, that marriage was coerced, and that the child that she had with Rolfe was actually from the rape. And that's what the child's name is, Thomas. So according to the oral tradition, this all happened. And at the end of her story, she eventually, you know, married John Rolfe and became kind of a figurehead in England, very well known as kind of a celebrity, and they brought her over later to England. She met the king and queen, and she later connected with John Smith, who had left in 1609. He burned his thigh in a gunshot incident. I don't know if gunpowder went off in a boat or something. Mm-hmm. He burned himself. He decided he had to go back to England to take care of that, and he never came back. And she was devastated by that. In fact, when she went to Jamestown right after he left and said, where is he? They told her that he had died. So when she eventually was brought to England, she ran into him. And a lot of historians have a document in this. So they did meet, and she's very angry with him when she met him. But on the way home from that voyage, the traditional history is that she developed a case of pneumonia and she died. She's 21 years old. She only lived for 10 years. But the Mattaponi Indians, Dr. Costello, in his version, he claims that she was murdered, that she was poisoned. And so it's just a different kind of perspective on the whole thing and how, you know, what her life was really like.
And it really makes us look at, you know, when we judge history by the story that we're handed, we don't always see it from the perspective of the details of the person involved. If she was 11 years old and she was exploited, it puts a whole different light on everything.
It does. It does. And she was an amazing person. I mean, I imagine her as someone who was fascinated with these foreigners, who was fascinated with the idea of another world, who wanted to see that world. Also, she's very astute. She was good at the language, at learning the English language. And I think her father saw that in her, and that's why she kind of became a conduit between the colonists and the tribes. Sure. And so she played an amazing role in history. At the same time, she was kind of used.
Right.
And so it's kind of interesting just to see that native perspective.
Yeah. A gifted, curious young woman.
Yeah, yeah.
Or a young girl, I should say, in the beginning. How about you? Are you Native American heritage?
I am not. I'm full-blooded Italian, both sides. Although my father was always interested in Native history and Native artifacts, so I kind of grew up with, you know, a respect for Native culture and traditions and music and art. And he was very much into that. He passed away a year ago, and so that was something I grew up with that. So I've always had that interest.
So you've crossed cultures as well.
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit.
Now, let's go back to Pocahontas. She's from this native world where strangers appear in the shore of her village. When you were doing your research and you were learning about that lost world, can you share with us any details that really struck with you that you hadn't heard about previously that you think are the most telling of what life was like back then?
That's a good question. You know, as I imagine it, at the time when John Smith and the colonists first appeared in the New World, the Native American tribes there had encountered the Spaniards. They've already been visited by other European cultures, and those were not good encounters. And I think my sense from the history and what I've read is that they could tell that they were facing change, that these people that were coming now more often, and more, that was one of their concerns when John Smith landed. Are there more? Are you going to live here? Are you, you know, what are you doing here? And as the supply vessels kept coming, they realized that these people are not going to go away. And there was some mm-hmm. dispute among the tribe as to what to do. Powhatan, Chief Powhatan was friendly. He, was curious about them, willing to trust them, but his interest was to have them help him fight the Spaniards if they ever return. His brother, Opechancanough, also a chief, was not open to having them there and didn't want any kind of relationship with them. So there was a lot of, I think within the tribe, a lot of division and kind of disagreement over what to do. So I think it brought in a time of it was tumultuous and mm-hmm. kind of frightening and it kind of sad because I think some of the natives there realized as more and more of the colonists arrived that their culture was going to change. And
yeah.
So it was a time of big change.
They saw the end coming, really.
They started to. Yeah, they started to. It was hard to accept, you know, and I think that led to a lot of mistakes in terms of the relationship and how they negotiated for themselves. And,
right.
Yeah, so it was interesting. And the world itself was, it was interesting writing this book because when I wrote my first book, that was a contemporary novel, mm-hmm. which was so easy to write in comparison to this historical because here in modern day, you can get in the car and go anywhere. You can take
sure.
a plane. You can ride a bus. You can be in another country in a day. Back then, all the travel was on foot or by canoe, and that was it. So in writing that story, I realized how focused they were on the area they lived in and how much the natural world mattered to them because of that. This was the world they knew. And so setting a scene, you know, trying to transition scenes or make scenes appear in different places was tough because they didn't go anywhere. You know, this 11-year-old girl was heavily guarded. If she did go to Jamestown, in my book, she does. A lot of people went with her. It was a full-day journey on foot. You know, that was the kind of thing you had to deal with. So the setting itself was kind of limiting in some way, writing the historical. So mm-hmm. the challenge was to try and make different scenes happen in different areas within the village or within the forested area around them or within near Jamestown or on these rivers. But that's kind of the location issue you're dealing with in a historical. So it's different. You kind of
right.
very focused in on the landscape and the natural world, which is so important to the culture. So there's kind of a sadness in a sense too to mm-hmm. see that, you know, the colonists came looking for natural resources. So, there was a lot of exploitation in that sense too. So it's kind of a sad time,
right.
time of change.
And when you were writing the book to immerse yourself in the mood of all that world, did you listen to music? Did you?
Oh. I burn incense when I write. It's
okay.
always been my, as soon as I light that incense and I smell it, it's time to settle down and
brings
write.
Brings you back.
So, but I've always felt it's really important to have sensory detail in the writing,
mm-hmm.
Touches and smells and mm-hmm. all of that. So you kind of have to imagine the setting because we're not on the East Coast here. And then write that into the story. And I think if you know your character well, you can kind of see it through her eyes and sense that world. And if you really immerse yourself in it and let her speak through you,
right.
you kind of, you have access to all of that.
Great point. Well, I know that in addition to writing and researching, you also market and promote other authors. What would you like to tell all those writers out there who envision a story and dream of making it come to life? Is it the sensory details, doing your research? Any advice for the writers out there?
I think the most important element of writing a story like this, or any story, is to really feel your characters, to immerse yourself in your characters, especially your main character. I think you have to know what she wants, what she longs for, what her dreams are, what her fears or hopes, mm-hmm. What she loves, what she hates. You have to have a deep, deep sense of who she is to write her story, especially if you're telling it in first person. You know, from a perspective of history, you have to have that. If you don't have that, I think you'd be lost. So I think that's the most important thing is to really feel the character, immerse yourself in character. And then those sensory details, to me personally, I just find that to be the most excruciatingly hard and important part of writing, because I think you have to put the reader in the scene and have the reader see what she's seeing and what she's feeling and what she can touch and smell and hear. So yes, those sensory details are all part of it. And if it's happened in the past, or if it's in an area you don't know well, you have to research that area. If there, you know, if there's nature involved or elements involved, you have to know the timing for those and what animals are in those areas,
right.
and you have to understand all of that too. So
do your homework.
Yeah, getting the sensory detail down and doing the homework, but mostly immersing yourself in the character. So after a while you hear her voice in your head and she speaks. I mean, you start to feel like you're channeling
right.
that person, and
wonderful.
She's writing her story. And then it's true. I think then at that point mm-hmm. the character takes over and the writer just gets out of the way kind
right.
of.
Wonderful. One last question, Paula.
Yes.
What book is next, and when can we expect to see it?
Well, as you know, this is part one of her story. So mm-hmm. this book focuses mainly on John Smith's arrival in the colony and some of the coming of age experiences that she has as an 11-year-old girl who's maturing, who's betrothed to be married, who's the daughter of a chief. So all of those events in her life are kind of captured in part one. Part two, the story picks up after John Smith leaves. She marries Kokoam. She's abducted. And then that part of the story happens next. So I'm writing part two right now. And it's going to take a couple of years, I think, to get that
okay.
written and polished up. And then I have an idea for another novel later on. That one will be set in Hawaii. It takes place in Molokai in the time of Father Damien. So that's kind of cooking in the back burner right now. But I'm focused on part two right now of this story.
And I know you have some events coming up.
I do. Yeah. November is National Native American Heritage Month. So I've been asked to speak at 5 of the local libraries here in San Diego.
Great.
The first appearance will be on November 8th at the Community University Branch Library at 12:30. And the following Saturday, the 15th, I'll be at the Pacific Beach Taylor Branch Library at 12:30. The following Tuesday, November 18th, I'll be at the Claremont Branch Library at 6:30 p.m., so that'll be an evening talk. And then the last day of appearances is November 22nd, and I'll be at two libraries that day. In the morning, at 12 o'clock noon, I'll be at the Rancho Penasquitos Branch Library, and then at 2 o'clock, I'll be appearing at the Oceanside Branch Library. And at that event, there will be powwow drummers from 1 to 2 p.m., and then I'll speak from 2 to 3, and then the library is offered to have some food trucks, some Native food brought in. So that will be a whole Native American event.
It sounds like fun.
Yeah, highlighting the month. So
great.
That'll be the final kickoff on the 22nd.
Well, Paula, our time is up, but thank you so much for joining us and telling us about your book.
Thank you for having me.
For more information on Paula Margulies, her work, and her blog, please visit her website at paulamargulies.com, and that's spelled PAULAMARGULIES. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.